Hey guys, my guest tonight, Craig Campobasso, is going to be talking about aliens and UFO hotspots. We'll be right back. Grab your popcorn and snacks. Find a comfy spot, take a seat or lie down, and let me transport you to a place of fantasy, ghost stories, ancient legends, odd creatures, alien encounters, and other magical topics. You may even decide to join the conversation. From faraway lands to your own backyard, with a small dash of pixie dust, turn out the lights and open your minds. The journey is about to begin. Good evening, everybody. Happy Wednesday. How's everybody doing today? I think I heard you say great. I'm doing great. I think I've got a good show too today. My name is Charlotte. I'm going to be your host for the next hour. I'm also the owner of the California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team based out of Sacramento, California. We are 45 strong up and down the state, which means if you think you have a paranormal need, we can help you out. It might take us a couple days to get to you because California is this huge state. People don't realize how big we are. You know, a lot of people think of us like Hawaii, the California girls, right? Everybody on the beach. Well, we are, but there's also a lot of California that's rural, farmland, you've got mountains, you name it, we've got it here, we got everything. So like I said, it might take us a couple of days to get to you, and in the case that it does, we have mediums on staff who can phone you and talk to you about what may or may not be going on, and in most cases, they can settle down whatever's happening energy-wise until we get out there. So if you want to find us, just Google California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team or California Haunts Radio, and you will find us on almost every social media there is. That being said, tonight, if you're watching from Facebook, and I know a lot of you are, my squeaky chair reaction again, and I know a lot of you are watching from Facebook, please be sure to hit that follow button if you haven't done so already. And during the show, give us a thumbs up, a happy face, participate in the chat room, all that good stuff. Because what that does is it puts us up higher in the master computer at Facebook, what we call the FYP. And that puts us up higher, and the computer takes notice of it, and it sends us out to more people. Just like, you know, you're sitting at home, you're having dinner, maybe somebody's in a back room, and maybe you start getting really into my guest tonight, and you want to share it. That's share. We ask you to share. Okay, we ask you to share this. We're trying to get out to as many people as possible. Same thing with YouTube and TikTok, all those places. You know, the more you comment and stuff, and the more hearts and things that we get, the FYP, we get higher. It goes viral, right? It goes out to more people. So please, 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 please do that if you see fit. Also, over at YouTube, if you haven't subscribed already, feel free to do so. Same thing with TikTok and everywhere else we're beaming over to. We have more than 900 videos sitting over on YouTube, and they're all different topics. I am a photojournalist in my real life, so I like to cover news items as well, timely news items as well. So I will change it up a little bit. For instance, yesterday we talked about the Yuba County five who went missing back in the late 70s, early 80s. And that was an interesting thing last night. So I do like to change it up. But tonight, we're back on track. We're back on track with our usual thing. And I'm going to make one adjustment here because this light is blasting the living heaven out of me. Hang on. There we go. Sometimes I like to turn it up, but I forget how I'm turning it up. Tonight we're getting back on track. My good friend Craig at Campobasso is with me. And we're going to be talking about aliens and alien hotspots. So you guys, you know, listen in. You guys can look this stuff up. Maybe Google Earth this stuff or whatever. Or maybe just do some research in Google. Go down that rabbit hole. But it's interesting to always talk to him about this stuff because he has so much information on it. He's got a couple books on the subject. And, yeah. So, anyway, I'm going to go ahead and bring him in. And without further ado, so here we go. And let's get the show on the road.
There we go.
How's it going?
Good. How you doing?
Good. It's been a while.
I know.
I'm excited to have you back on. For everybody who doesn't know who you are, can you kind of tell them about you?
Sure. I'm the author of 7 books. 2 of them are for MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the film business. I've been casting movies for a very, very long time. I worked on the original Dune with David Lynch for 4 years. as well. So I'm in the new books and documentaries that are being made about that since the new resurgence of Dune has hit us, which is like so amazing to see that they can do all the visual effects now, which really we couldn't do way back when, or right. The producers couldn't do. And, I write, produce, and for this little book, The Extraterrestrial Species Almanac, I just finished the documentary, and it will be out this summer, and we're going to do a sneak peek for anybody who's going to be at Contact in the Desert on Saturday, June 1st from 6:30 to 8 p.m., and then we're going to do a little Q&A afterwards.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, when you mentioned the special, the stuff they can do with movies these days, good example of that is The Mandalorian and Disney soundstage with that big volume thing that they
did. Oh, and the surround sound. Now they have surround picture.
Yeah.
So now the actors don't even have to imagine. I was one of the casting directors on Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow, very first film that was 92 or 93% CGI. It was very difficult getting the actors to react to everything I was telling them before they would do their dialogue and stuff. And there really should have been, you know, I did in some of my acting classes do green screen acting.
I was going to say,
because
yeah.
It's very difficult, but now with that screen, they put them right in the environment and they don't even have to imagine anymore. They're right there.
Absolutely. You know, I was just thinking, as you said that, it's got to be hard to stand in front of a green screen and react to a monster that's not there, or somebody chasing you down the hall that's not there.
It's so funny. It is. When I did the short film, The Stranger at the Pentagon, which are these posters behind me there, we had 90 visual effects. So we had a giant green screen soundstage. We had James Cameron's visual effects coordinator. And it's interesting because all of the actors around a table, which the table was green, the floor was green, the background was green, and we had a ball, and we say, okay, now everybody look up at this ball. And one actor kept looking off over here, and I go, no, you guys have to all look at the ball at the same time. It's when the holographic creature pops up.
It makes me think of Star Trek, you know, the original Star Trek.
Oh, gosh, yes.
That. And so they spent half their time doing this. You know, with their chairs, just trying to look like the thing was in motion. Oh,
completely. I mean, looking at the new Star Trek series now on Paramount Plus, oh, man, they're just so good.
Yeah, it's come such a long way.
Yeah,
see, I'm showing so how old I good. Actually am. I was, by the way, because when the original Star Trek came out, I was still itty-bitty-bitty, but I remember seeing it in the 70s, you know, as I was growing
oh,
up.
Oh, yeah, and absolutely.
That time period.
Yeah.
What do you think, you know, now when you look at this, the UFO UAP thing, I'm not going to call it a craze, because when I started ghost hunting, it was still fairly hush-hush with people.
Right.
Where people didn't want to talk about it. And then finally it came around the last 18 years. Everybody wants to talk about ghosts and stuff. And I'm seeing that now with UFOs and UAPs. What has changed everybody's mind, do you think?
Well, I believe that as we evolve, right, I really believe that when people start to evolve, they start to want to heighten their sixth sense. Their sixth sense gets heightened. And a lot of that is done through discovering what is out there that's sort of unknown to us. And that's why a lot of the, like a zillion ghost shows and everything, everybody's absolutely hooked, because that brings them into that world. But a lot of people don't realize that UFOs and the paranormal are absolutely connected, because lots of paranormal experiences happen when UFOs appear and disappear and all those kinds of things. There's so many stories, and I hear new stories every single day, and it just blows your mind.
It does blow your mind.
Yeah.
My question for you is, as a casting director working in Hollywood, what got you into this subject?
Well, when I was 26 years old, I had just finished working in the casting office on Amazing Stories, the Spielberg Amazing Stories back in the 80s. Uh-huh. And that's when I had my own amazing story. I tell everybody, I was a kid in the valley who went to work every day. I moved out of my parents' house when I was 17. I was self-supportive. I worked two jobs, and I completely supported myself. And I just went out on the weekends like everybody else. But when I turned 26, I had a major spiritual awakening, which made me start to wonder what was out there in the great big universe. The normal questions, the who, what, when, where, why, how do we get here? All of those things came. And then I started remembering things from a child that had happened to me that I had just stored in my memory banks. And one of them was when I was 10 years old. I did see an angel in my bedroom, but then I also saw an astral angel, I shall say. Okay. And then I was taking a bath and I was looking in the nozzle sitting there, and I saw my reflection, and I just went into this catatonic state, and something came in and pulled my whole essence out into the middle of the universe. The universe opened up. And I was immersed inside of it for a split second. And all those questions that hit me when I was 26, where do we come from? What's this all about? All of those things went through me there. I was thrust back in my body and then contemplated it. And then it was gone. And interestingly enough, even though these little things happened when I was a kid, I never discussed it with my parents. It was like, it was either erased, or it wasn't that it was fully erased. Mm-hmm. It's just that it seems like it got stored so I wouldn't talk about it. Mm-hmm. Right. And I do find with a lot of people who do have contact with extraterrestrial races, benevolent, contact either in person or through astral or meditation, is that they all had experiences when they were a kid, which was to remove the fear of it when you became an adult.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, let me ask you this. When you talk about seeing this angel being, what did it look like to you?
Well, I thought, to me, I thought it could have been a soul. Right. I thought maybe one of my parents had died and I ran into their bedroom and I held my finger under their nose. And I was like, oh, they're breathing. Then I thought, oh, maybe one of my sisters died. And I ran in to their rooms and they were fine, you know, but it did have wings. Right. And it was really quite beautiful. It's not the only time. I mean, I've been visited by angelics a lot in my adulthood. And the thing that comes along with them is that they are so beautiful inwardly that you sob for at least 15 minutes because you just can't believe how beautiful they are on the inside. Right. I mean, their outer appearance is also beautiful because in a soul's perfection, you're also going to be your ideal of perfection and beauty.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right.
And but man, the inward stuff, you just sob and sob and sob.
I was just thinking about, I had a couple sightings myself. From what my neighbors used to tell me was, at one time, one of the women who lived in this house was the sister of a nun, or a story like that, something like that. And the nuns would play badminton in my backyard. And so I was a latchkey kid, so I would come home, you know, every day at like 2:30, 3 o'clock, and make a little food and sit at what we call the breakfast nook area, looking out towards my backyard. And I saw this. I didn't see wings on it, but I saw what looked like a white sheet go from my center divider into my fireplace.
Yeah.
And I saw it a couple of times, but yeah. You know, I also saw other things in this house, but they didn't look like that. And to me, that would be the angelic thing, because it's all in white, like you say, you know, real nice white light.
That's right. That's right. And that's how people can discern when they're seeing things. If they're seeing, you know, bright white, that type of thing, even in orbs as well, you know, it's a benevolent, and it's what you feel when you see it attached. Right. And of course, like on all the ghost shows, they see shadow people, they see crawlies, they see all these different types of things. And, you know, so those are on the malevolent sides.
All about the ratings. All about TV.
All about the ratings. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Let me ask you this. You live down in Southern California. Rob Lowe had that TV show for a while where he was going around looking at weird stuff. Did you ever have a chance to check out that stuff that's supposed to be off Malibu, off the coast?
Well, I know of it, but I'm not a scuba diver, so I'm not going in that water. You know, I mean, I don't need to know about it that bad, but I do know about it, and I do mention it in the hotspot book, because I have a lot of friends that live in Malibu, and they say a lot of times when they're up in the middle of the night, you know, their windows look out straight somewhere right on Malibu Road, and they look straight out, and they see craft going in and out of the water all the time. And especially in Topanga Canyon as well.
I had an uncle that lived over in off of Las Virginas, over in that area.
Yeah.
So I'm familiar with the Topanga Canyon and all that area.
That's right.
When you think about it, considering LA is so populated, that is a rural area. I mean, that whole area
is
nothing but canyons and stuff out there.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So as far as hotspots, we were going to talk about, you know, alien hotspots or UFO hotspots. What are the hotspots in California?
Well, I would say my favorite hotspot in California is Giant Rock and the Integratron, because they're synonymous with each other. Do you know about them? Have you ever?
I do not. Tell me about.
Oh, wow! This is good.
Come on to learn.
Oh, this is really good.
All
right. Well, I'll give you a capsulized version. The whole story I did put in the UFO hotspot book. And I was able to go into the Integratron archives, and they allowed me to use pictures that were never published before and things of that nature. So I had heard about this place called the Integratron, where people just felt this amazing energy, and they felt like there might have been somebody in the room that wasn't from here, like a human. Yeah, I just heard all of these stories, and I've heard about Giant Rock, but I never really quite put them together. So how I first put them together was Dr. Frank Stranges, who wrote Stranger at the Pentagon, and I got a phone call from the historian of Giant Rock, who was putting together a UFO retro convention at the Integratron. And she wanted us to be a part of it. So Dr. Frank and I were so excited to go there, because it was my first time. So the sisters that own it are fantastic. And we drove down, they closed it down for the day, and we sat up on the second floor. And what I didn't know was that Dr. Frank was the MC of the early conventions that were held out at Giant Rock. Now, George Van Tassel, who ran the Giant Rock Airport, right, worked for Howard Hughes, McDonnell Douglas, all of that. And there was a previous man who ran it, and he had taken dynamite and blown out a large cavity below a Giant Rock where he made his home. So George moved in, his wife and two daughters, into there, and he ran the airport. He just wanted to go out and have a spiritual experience in the desert. Mm-hmm. And so he began meditation and prayer under the rock. Interestingly enough, two people I know were with him in those early days. One recently passed. One is still alive. So I got everything straight from the horse's mouth, which was great. And he began channeling their space beings. And I was able to put some of those channelings in the book as well. But he is the very first channeler to channel Ashtar. And she told me, my friend Athena, she told me that this was the first channeling where he sort of fell over from the energy. Mm-hmm. All the other channelings were normal, but this one was powerful and et cetera. So then we sort of flash forward. This is like 52. We're now in like 53. He likes sleeping outside on a cot because it's hot. Right. And he said it wasn't unusual for people to show up in the middle of the night. And for some reason, he woke up. He saw a man approach him. He went and greeted him. He said it was 5'6", short blonde hair, very kind, and introduced himself as Salgonda. And when he turned, he said, "Would you like to... can I show you the interior of my ship?" And George saw the saucer there, and he was beside himself because, you know, here he is. He had worked for these different Howard Hughes, for instance. He was really interested in how they flew. And these were very benevolent beings. The other men on the craft all as well were like 5'6" with short hair. And so... anyway, in the book, I put all the descriptions of what sure. he said it was and all of that. But what was most interesting about this is he gave him the blueprints to build a machine called the Integratron, which would reduce the aging process. It's a cellular rejuvenation, right? Mm-hmm. And so once it was built and once it was turned on, all you had to do is through one door on the bottom, have people walk through the bottom and out the other door, and their cells would be rejuvenated, which would also eliminate sickness, disease, and help to prolong health, right?
Right.
So anyway, he needed funds to build this thing. So that's why he started doing the UFO conventions out at Giant Rock. And mm-hmm. they would have people like George Adamski and all the people who then were having contacts by humans throughout our galaxy. They all live on the interior of their planets, right? So there are several reasons, but one is we live on the surface. We're being bombarded by rays and everything that makes us age. Mm-hmm. When you're in confined environments, which they are, they can tear us out the interior of planets, and they can live there. And the thing is that then they can control the resonation fields. Mm-hmm. So that's why they stay looking 30 years old, and they live for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. I believe Salgonda at the time was 500 or 600 years old. Wow. What's interesting is this happened in 53. Valiant Thor came in 57. and brought the same technology to Eisenhower about how to eliminate sickness, disease, prolong life, eliminate poverty, and, you know, came to talk to them about free energy, everything. So he stayed there for 3 years as well. Now, it took many, many years for him to build it. Howard Hughes gave him $20,000 to start, which was great. And then they just kept having these conventions once a year. And they grew to 10,000 people out in the middle of the desert in Landers, California, right?
Right.
So it became quite huge. I actually have videotape of it and all of that. So anyway, George Van Tassel passed away. And before he did, it was 95% complete. Sol Gonda told him that he did not want him to turn it on because the people weren't ready. And then he passed away. And then this is just hearsay, but somebody said all of a sudden all of his papers vanished and this, because George always felt that the military were always watching him from afar. He would see them looking, because really right over the mountain was a military base. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
So it just went through many hands. But if anybody hasn't been there, I will tell you, it is the most energetic, beautiful place to get a healing. On the second floor, you can go to Integratron.com and you'll see all the mats on the floor. And they do the singing bowls, a sound bath. And you literally feel like you're floating. And because it's a sound chamber, all of the sounds are moving as if they're alive. I mean, one time I was there, the Gregorian chanters from Italy were there recording their album inside. So they asked if they could come in and do some chants for us. It was the most mind-blowing thing I had experienced up to that point. So anyway, it's a thing that where if anybody wants to visit, you have to make a reservation. You can't just show up for a sound bath. And then while you're there, you can drive out to Giant Rock and check it out. So all the information is in the book, who to call, what to do. You can even hire the Giant Rock historian who will take you out and teach you everything about the history of Giant Rock while you skywatch, sit in chairs, look through night vision binoculars, all that kind of stuff. So those are my favorite places.
That sounds so cool.
Yeah, you have to go. You have to go.
Definitely have to go. Now, I've heard about that machine. I didn't hear what the exact name of it was, but I have heard, you know, through my travels, through what I do, I've heard about this machine. And I also have been told by certain people that claim that they've been stationed on Mars or whatever planets that they do have those things operating on these other planets.
Yeah. Yeah. I would imagine they would if they were on the surface. When they're in on their ships and in environments, their resonation fields are already tuned to that where their cellular structure stays young and all of that. I mean, it's the technologies and things that they have are just beyond anything we can dream of.
Well, like you were saying, you know, there has to be certain atmospheric conditions for you to maintain that particular age once you walk through that thing. Do you think it's ever, you know, this would eventually, if they ever decide to use it, you know, for the civilian population, do you think it would ever be used on the surface of Earth? Because I don't see what point it would be to use it. They'd have to have like a dome or something on top of the cities.
Well, they could. But who's to say that you couldn't create that energy in your own environment at a certain point, right? Well, I mean, there's ways of doing it and ways around it. You know, what's interesting, I'll just give you an example. Once, Dr. Frank went to Las Vegas. Valiant Thor's ship is stationed at Lake Mead, right? And so they usually come and visit with him, and then they sometimes take him back to the ship. And I knew he was going, and usually he would call me when he returned. Mm-hmm. But that particular weekend, he called me, and I was talking to him, and I said, "You sound so young." I said, "Where are you?" He goes, "I'm on the ship." And I said, "Really?" He said, "Yes. If you walked with a cane, you don't walk with a cane. If you were blind, you were not blind. If anything ails you, you go back to perfect resonation." And at this time, he was in his mid-70s.
Wow.
So, I mean, to me, that just blew me away. I mean, he sounded like he was 23 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's almost worth it to be taken. To go stand in the backyard and go, "Take me."
Money.
You know, I mean, that's absolutely incredible. And I can believe that they would. I mean, their technology's so far, you know, ahead of us. I can actually understand that and see that.
Yeah.
And see that. How many alien races are there? Do you know off the top of your head, or I mean, are there thousands and thousands? Or because sometimes you hear, well, there's 14 that we know of, and blah 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 blah. But
well, I mean, when MUFON asked me to do this, I started compiling the races that I knew of, and I had about 120, but they told me I had to keep it under 300 pages along with the actual, along with the artwork.
Uh-huh.
But just to give you an idea, the Alpha Centaurians say that they know of 1,019,000 civilizations on other worlds. Now, the Urantia book says that Earth's registry number in the universe is 5,342,482,337,666.
Wow.
So it's quite, you know, and you have to remember that there's also interdimensional, in everything that that we talk about. Mm-hmm. And so I decided, I had heard Paul Hellyer, the former Canadian Minister of Defense, who actually avidly spoke about the alien races or extraterrestrials that have been visiting Earth that he knew of. And he'd been an advocate for that his whole life. And towards the end of his life, he said he knew of 82 races. And I thought, if I can fit 82 races in here, that'll be my homage to Paul Hellyer, right? So I was able to just squeeze that amount in and get it in there under, grays, reptilians, hybrids, and Nordics. And there are some insectoids and things like that as well. But we go a little. What's great about the documentary is it's an expansion of the book. You're going to hear from the man who's been visited by the Clarions in person for years and years and years, who's sharing pictures of them. They're human, but they look a little different, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. They look a little different. You're going to hear from a man who has been on the Alpha Centaurian craft over 100 times.
Wow.
Right? And they really are, Alpha Centaurians are really focused on South America because the people there are much more benevolent. They have much more heart because, you know, when you're in a poorer culture, like a lot of them spread out in lands where they don't have access to medical or anything like that. If their food doesn't grow, they don't eat. So they really are there a lot, and they help them with their food. They do tend to their people if they're sick and help to heal them. But I have met two men who are contactees for a long time, but then I've talked to another who lives nearby me, who's also a contactee of theirs. And then the very first man I ever heard of was in the 70s or 80s of a man. And it's the same beings, that the same man, the same Alpha Centaurian and his wife or partner. His name is Antaral and her name is Ivica. And so they just come and visit them, and then they actually showed themselves to some people in one of these groups, which was prearranged out in Mount Shasta, out at Sand Flats. Yeah. And a good friend of mine was there, and he saw the ships come in and light up the forest, and they appear to what they call through a Zendra. Mm-hmm. And a Zendra is a portal. But what's interesting about the portal is when you're seeing them in the portal, if they're on their home world or if they're on their ship, if you walked over the threshold, so would you be on their ship or on their home planet, right?
Wow. Yeah.
Which I found fascinating. He's 8 feet tall. There were supposedly a variety of beings that were there. My friend said he waited. He was not picked to go and meet them. Wow. But everyone else in this group of 50 was sent back to camp. He said, I stayed out and watched it from about 100 or 200 feet. Mm-hmm. And when the people came out, he said it looked like what Moses must have been like after he saw, you know, spoke to the burning bush. Right?
Wow.
Yeah.
Right.
And some people were quite freaked out. Others, you know, it was quite a revelation. And that kind of thing. So, you know, they are really, really here trying to make contact, because more and more than people talk about it, like us, we're talking about it. People become more familiar with it. The more familiar with it, the less fear that they will have.
Absolutely. Question in the chat room is there an alien race that resembles like octopus?
Well, in The Rival, there is. But, you know, I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt it, since they are such intelligent creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I've not come in contact with any, no.
The other thing, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking about this, and I had talked with I interviewed Andrew Goff this morning.
Uh-huh.
And we were talking about Inner Earth and all that. And something I was thinking about, you know, how over the centuries, you know, the Egyptians, they didn't disappear, but, you know, things like the Mayans and the Aztecs and the Romans had gotten so far with their technology that they literally disappeared. And the aliens, you know, we know this from reading way back and looking at the pictures on the pyramids and all this, that they were with us for a long, long time.
Right.
And my thought was, is they've got this technology, and maybe, like you say, the aliens are waiting for us to catch up. We're getting there as far as our technology and the way, and like you say, the way we think, you know, before
that's
they do
right.
presentation to us. Because for all we know, when this finally comes down, it could be your neighbor across the street.
Well, and that's why there's so many consciousness raising programs going on Earth from them, which is star seeds, right? Star seeds, the star seeds coming in now, the kids are brilliant. They're speaking star. I know a kid that speaks five star languages. They are very in full embodiment because the prior star seeds have helped to raise the vibration. And really what they're doing is they're waiting for us to rise up and out of duality and become fully conscious so that our heart rules our mind and not our ego rules our mind. So service to universal kind, not just to humankind, but instead of service to self. So it's really quite beautiful. And I mean, there's many, many hybrids that are living on the planet. There's programs that they're doing up there with the star seeds by taking their genetics and merging it with other humans up there where they raise those children. Then they'll be set upon the earth as teachers as well. And the thing is the hybrids are really so that people can see that, oh, you're us and you're them. And you have a lot to offer. So there's many, many hybrids living on the planet. And there's some that are, you know, there's many ways a hybrid can come into being. We go into that in the documentary, but that's just one way. Yeah.
Another question I have for you is pertaining to hotspots. Why do you think there's certain locations that are more hot than others for sightings and contact and all this?
Well, it has to do with the vortex energies in those areas, like Sedona. Sedona is a vast vortex because with the iron ore and the quartz crystalline, which is embedded all throughout Sedona. I mean, even on Bell Rock, you can see the crystal coming out through the rock. Same thing out by Giant Rock. Actually, right next to Giant Rock was a mountain that was made of quartz crystal. Right? Most of it is been taken by everybody who goes out there now, but it's still called, to me, we've always called it Crystal Mountain. It's a mound, actually. So, but when those energies get, they spark and they create this vortex, and the beings are attracted, like they're attracted to people who are harmonious, who are happy. That's why when people like Ricardo Gonzalez, who's one of the extraterrestrial contactees with the Alpha Centaurians, is when they before he calls his friend Antaral in, they all do a meditation together, and then they all start chanting something happy, and then they all start laughing and dancing and doing those things because they need that high vibration to come in, right? So it's amazing. I was out at a property many years ago in Scottsdale, and there was 18 different extraterrestrial vortices there on this back property. And you could feel it in each one. And I did feel a craft up above. And I said, all right, I'm going to take my camera. And this is at night.
Right.
I said, I'm going to hold my camera. When I count to three, shoot down a blue beam, right? And every time I did it, that blue beam would be in the picture, right? But also this place had orbs. And if you were to sing, dance, chant, and you took a picture, you would get an orb storm. It means one on top of the other, on top of the other. There were like a billion of them overlaid, and then you would see different size orbs. You would see diamond shaped orbs, and I'm the first one to have caught a heart shaped orb on the property.
Incredible.
Yeah, just incredible. Yeah, really. Absolutely amazing. Incredible.
Now, let me ask you this. When I was younger, growing up, a lot of these UFO sightings and contact sightings came out of Brazil.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
What does Brazil have that some of these other places don't?
Well, it's like I told you, the people's hearts are more open. They're more open to receive, right? And they're less afraid because they have nothing to be afraid of. They've been seeing them ever since. It to them, it's like a neighbor dropping in to say hi, because from the time they were born, they have always seen the sky people or the star people, right? So they've never been terrified of them.
Makes a lot of sense. Makes
Yeah.
a lot of It does make a lot of sense. With these hot spots in California, I mean, we talked about like over there off of Malibu, which would which is a real hot spot. What other hot spots are there? Because
Well, let's see.
yeah.
Well,
My mouth doesn't want to work.
let me look real
Listen,
quick.
he's gonna cheat and look now, you guys. No, I'm
I
kidding.
got to cheat and look
He's gonna
because you
cheat
know
and
what? There's so
look.
many hot spots. Well, I know of, in other places like Sedona, there's the Bradshaw Ranch, which is take Skinwalker Ranch and multiply it by 10. Yeah. And I've experienced lots of stuff there as well. I would say, oh, Mount Shasta for
Of course, I
sure.
forgot about Bella Chassis, yes.
Yeah, Mount Shasta for sure. And because the ancient Lemurians live, that's the capital. Is Telos. And when they first arrived, like hundreds of thousands of years ago, they were living mostly on the surface all over California, and their town, their whole, I guess if you wanted to call it a state or whatever, was called Telos. And then after Atlantis and Lemuria and all those things went asunder, before that they had began moving underground below Mount Shasta, so they're a part of Agartha, and there's many many cities and towns. They're all We go into that in great depth as well. About Agartha and the Agarthans. And I mean, it's so amazing to just think about what's beneath us, right? And these beings come up and interact with us. And I know two Lemurians, a dear friend of mine, was friends with them, and they came up and lived and worked to get the experience of being up here on the surface in San Francisco for a couple of years. Other extraterrestrials as well, who have something to do with Earth, do have to come and live here and integrate with people. I think it was the Koldashans in E.T. Almanac. Their pilot, whose name was Valdar, and he had to live in Italy, and he was there for a couple of years. But one of the people that he friended was an actual star seed from where he's from. So eventually he came clean to him, and he was more open to it, and they started a little group. And then once his 2-year tenure was done, he went back out and did his job as a commander up in the skies. So,
Well, you know what only makes sense though. I mean, if you're gonna work with another species, it only makes sense to kind of integrate with them to see
sure.
what their likes and dislikes and customs are and stuff to make that transition a lot easier and for you to
Yes.
understand it better as well.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
A question about the reptilians, because there's a lot of stories out there, from different contactees, talking about how you got your good aliens and then you got the ones like the reptilians and groups like that. How does that work with those good and bad factions? Or are the reptilians as bad as people say they are? Or,
well, here's the thing. There's good and bad in every race, even in the universe, right?
Right.
And I think the ETs have put it best. They say, blame the individual, not the race, okay. Right? And yes, there are bad reptilians. There's bad humans. We know
absolutely.
That.
Oh yeah.
You know, we live with that on a daily basis. But there are, and a lot of it comes from experience. We in the documentary, we have an incredible draconian section that will blow your guys' minds. Mm-hmm. That even goes into some other things that people haven't heard of. Mm-hmm. And but there's also benevolent ones, and I know people who are visited by the benevolent ones all the time. Mm-hmm. Right. And what's interesting is that in those people, I feel that energy within them. So I know that's where they come from, mm-hmm. right? They're a star seed from there, right? Mm-hmm. But they're benevolent as well. So it's interesting because it's just that they're so frightening looking, right. I think is why we have such a fascination with them. Mm-hmm. Right, because right. they could be the most horrific looking thing and be totally evil, but then on the other side of that, they could be completely frightening looking and mm-hmm. be so sweet and benevolent on the inside. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right,
right.
So it's a lot of different, yeah.
I always get a good laugh because the Sacramento Zoo has a children's playground. And one of the things that's featured there is a merry-go-round. And the merry-go-round features 7-foot-tall praying mantises. Things like that. So every time I see a kid get on that thing, it makes me laugh because I think, really? You know,
wow,
that was done just as part of the let's study insect thing at the zoo, or
right,
maybe somebody at the zoo is an alien, who knows? But
that's true, it's
hilarious to watch because they've got all these giant insects and stuff.
Well, I'll tell you, in my research over all these years, there's not been much on the mantis beings. People would usually get one visitation or see one on a ship and not really quite understand it, mm-hmm. but I have a mantis hybrid who is in the documentary. So people are going to get a good earful about, you know, the mantis beings and all of that there. I mean, I've always found them benevolent. Mm-hmm. And in times where I know that I have had experiences, or in the early days when an experience was coming, there would be a praying mantis over my door that would be there for 3 days.
Wow, okay.
Right? Once in Sedona, after an experience, it was in the room that I was staying in. I went and took a shower. When I came back out, praying mantis laying perfectly dead on my pillow.
Wow.
Right. Another time when I went and did a conference in Mount Shasta, they put me in a very seedy motel. I did not feel safe there. Mm-hmm. Lots of partiers and, you know, all of that. Mm-hmm. And the minute I arrived at my door, there's a wooden block on the door with the number. Mm-hmm. Praying mantis right on top, stayed there the entire time I was there for the conference and you know, until I left.
Like, so, he's protecting you. That's pretty
they
awesome.
Are, yeah, yeah, they are. I mean, it's amazing.
Well, now you make me wonder about the mantises, because as a kid, I remember they were always in my backyard. I was always one of these kids that would let them crawl all over my hand. I have a jar with at least one or
Right,
two every
right.
week full with these praying mantises in there. So now it makes me wonder if I wasn't having visitations during
Well,
this time.
you might. I mean, interestingly enough, at the Bradshaw Ranch, there's a couple of friend, well, acquaintance that I met at Contact last year. They go out there. They were on the recent thing of Skinwalker Ranch, the one where they do it beyond Skinwalker Ranch.
Right.
And they were going through it with them, but they had shared with me that they had seen mantis beings on the property as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice. So what's next for you?
Well, the exciting stuff is this is my four book series called The
Okay.
Autobiography of an Extraterrestrial Saga. The first book is called I Am Taran, and Sylvia Brown actually wrote the foreword,
Nice.
which was awesome. She wrote 65 best-selling books. I met her by happenstance. We became friends, and when I finished it, I asked her if she would write it, and she read it in a night, and she called me and she said, "I will definitely write one for you." She says, "I have three publishers. They always ask me to write forewords, and I always say no because I didn't believe in those writers." She says, "So I did one at the beginning of my career, and you will be my second."
That's awesome.
I thought that was so great. And so I just finished two prequel books to the four-part book series, which is great. And by the way, they're all illustrated as well with incredible things. And then, of course, we're just gearing up for the big release of the documentary. And I'm looking forward to that. So if anybody wants to see that, if you go to like my website, if you go to strangerathepentagon.com, you can watch the short film there, or the short films on Amazon Prime as well. But if you subscribe, when the documentary comes out, you'll get a notice when it's out, when you can then go online and rent it or buy it. We'll have DVDs available as well. The other book site for the Taran books and the UFO Hotspot and the ET Almanac is autobiography of an ANET.com.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Very cool, very cool. Thank you so much for coming on. It is always so fun to have you on.
Thank you so much. This was so much fun, and it's like flown by.
Yeah, we'll have to get you on again. How's that sound?
I would. I'd love that.
All right. Well, Craig, you have a great rest of your evening, and thank you so much.
You too. Bye, everybody.
See if I can get the button right this time. There we go. All right. It's always so fun to have him on. You learn so much. Tomorrow, we will be talking cryptids with our good friend Stan Gordon. That will be a phone-in interview, so we'll be doing that. So I'll be here at 6:30 p.m. Pacific for that. I do have contact information for Craig if you guys would like it. And it was a very interesting show. And now I'm going to be wondering for a long time about the mantises that used to come visit me, right? If you like the show, share it with five people. If you hated the show, share it with five of your enemies. I'm trying to get the word out. Equal opportunity. We're inching towards that 1,000 subscriber mark on YouTube. We're doing really good over it with you guys on the RSS feed at Apple and iHeartRadio and all those places. I really, truly appreciate it. So here is Craig's information for you, and then I will let you guys go. So here, let's rock out of this. Here we go. Websites are stranger at thepentagon.com, autobiography of Annette.com, and at CraigCampobasso.com. The books, Extraterrestrial Species Almanac, the UFO Hotspot Compendium. I almost said compensation. Okay, compendium. Okay, and there's the book, I Am Tyron, and he has several books in that series. You can get those books on his websites. In fact, the author makes more money if they sell them directly off their websites. However, you can still get them at Amazon as well. Okay, guys, I'll see you tomorrow, 6:30 p.m. Pacific, with Stan Gorton. Have a great evening, everyone.